Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Just a demoralizing loss for the Titans on Sunday in Indianapolis. You know, against the Browns, you could say, oh, the defensive line was really good. Against the Saints, you could say, oh, Tannehill threw three interceptions. Inexplicable loss at Indianapolis. And joining us now to break it all down is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, I can't quite put my finger on it. A loss, a win, a loss, a win, now another loss for the Titans. I mean, the picture perfect example of inconsistency. In your experience, what is the root of inconsistency for a football team?
You know, I typically feel like that is usually when, like, you have inexperienced players, and so you find yourself in a situation where you're like, man, like, we can do it. Like, we've seen the good, and we've seen it happen. We're just not doing it, like you said, consistently or across the board. So I feel like that is oftentimes the issue. And then the other aspect of it, I would say, is this. Like, the margin for error in the National Football League, even between teams, you know, at the very top versus teams that are kind of in the middle, is small. It's not a huge, you know, talent discrepancy or coaching discrepancy. And so the details and the little things, you know, seem to matter quite a bit. And so when you just barely miss on a play, or, you know, a guy drops a ball on third down and it's like, well, he's had a pretty good game, he just had one drop. When those things happen, unfortunately, they end up impacting the outcome of a football game. So, you know, and then the solution to it, if you will, you know, is tricky, because you get upset when you lose and people panic when they lose. And so sometimes you feel like you need to make a big change. And sometimes it's like, no, we just need to change this one degree. We don't need to change, you know, in terms of attention to detail or whatever it might be. We don't need to make some type of crazy right turn on how we've been preparing each and every week.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us through 5 weeks, now one divisional game, 2-3 on the season. Season's not over, not going to punt, not going to say that the world is over. But I thought that was it was just a bad loss on Sunday in Indianapolis. Is that just who the Titans are? Are the Titans just not a very good team?
I don't know that I would say that they're not a very good team, because we've seen them play really well at times, and there's aspects of what they do that give a lot of people trouble. And so, and I think that's a little bit of kind of what I'm getting at in terms of, look, it's disappointing when you lose. It's really disappointing when you have a divisional loss. It's compounded when it happens against the other team's backup quarterback. It's compounded when you have a defensive penalty that you really could have done without and maybe impacts the game. So I think when that happens, you know, you want to say, this is just who we are, and we've got to change this, this, and this in order to be good. When I do think that you can look at it and be like, gosh, we're right there. Like, we don't need to make this, look, this is important. We need to fix it, but we also at the same time can't make it bigger than it is.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, before we go any further, I have to ask you about your college experience in the booth the other day. I was watching live as a kid in New York. I think it was 1978, if I've got this right, was the Joe Pisarcik game, Giants, Herm
right.
Edwards.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was watching, and the Giants were ahead in the game because – I think the Eagles kicker had missed two extra points. It was 14-12. I don't know why I remember that, and I remember the shock of that happening. They had kneeled down on the play before. Then they decided, for whatever reason, oh, let's just run another play. What the heck? And they got burned. We know what happened.
What's the worst that could happen?
What's the worst thing that could happen? Well, Herm Edwards is still famous for that. So I give you a lot of credit. You and West Durham are doing great on these games, by the way. You guys are way higher than the games that you get often, but what a game. And you said it before it happened. That's where I give you a lot of credit. Like, why? What are they doing here? But that had to be surreal to watch unfold.
Yeah, it is. And, like, listen, you announce events as well, Willie. You know, a lot of times, like, when you're announcing, you know, a game, there are different things that come in. Like, yes, you're announcing the game. There are things just as a network that you're promoting. There's other traffic in a broadcast other than just sitting it and watching every play and being consumed with every play of the moment. So, like, there is an element of, you know, there are other distractions. And so, you know, at the time that that's going on, and there was a very bizarre sequence where, you know, so Miami, and the whole time they had the ball, I knew they were in a 4-minute offense mode. And they were doing a really bad job. You know, a lot of people, I think, probably tuned in at the very end, but, like, they were doing a really bad job of snapping the ball with, like, 7 seconds left on the clock instead of snapping it with 1 second left on the play clock. And so, you know, I'm talking about that, and I'm looking at the situation, and then Miami thinks they get a first down. The yard to gain gets challenged. It actually gets moved back, and now it's 3rd and 1. They get a first down. Georgia Tech takes their last time out, but the game's over at that point with 2 kneel downs. And so 2nd down happens, and they come out in a formation. And I don't know if you feel like this, but, like, there are often times where it's like, look, there's a lot going on for me in the broadcast that I think there's part of me that gives the coaching staff a benefit of the doubt. Like, oh, they could, wait a second, they're in an offensive formation. Now I want my math checked before I say something stupid, right? Say, like, wait a second, why are they doing this?
And I have done that, saying, why are they doing this? Well, they say, well, because it's not a penalty, Willie. The goalie is just pulled or something. I'm like, you feel like a complete idiot in the booth, correct, for having done that.
So you want to be sure that you're right. You know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, get it wrong. And listen, I think that all of us feel that way, you know, in your show today or whether you're calling a game or whatever. And so, you know, I just was like, so, you know, I'm hammering the producer, like, is my math wrong? Is my math wrong? And I'm like, and sometimes because of a weird, you know, sequence, you know, it's like, oh, wait a second. We don't need to be running plays. Let's take a knee. Like that, I've been on teams where that's happened. But at that point, like, you've had time now. Like, it's very evident that the game is over with one more taking a knee. And then there's this element of, hey, but is it really going to impact the game? Is it really going to turn into that? And you just never know. And so, look, I mean, I think, we've been on doing stuff for years now. I don't try to be a hot take artist or anything like that. But Miami is 4-0. They should be 5-0. They won that game. I mean, they won it, but for 34 seconds, which should have never happened. They'd be 5-0. And then they play North Carolina, and a team that I think they probably match up well and beat. Like, you could talk, but that's an opportunity to be in the top 10 for a program that has a great history. And that's why I said, like, look, this is as big of a mistake from a coaching perspective as I've seen at that level. Like, that's a huge blunder. And look, I say that and still think that Mario Cristobal actually has that program in a better direction than when he took over. But yeah, that's one of the crazier things I think I've ever witnessed.
Because I would say probably, I don't know, 8 out of 10 times, even if the fumble happens, they just need one stop. There's still kind of a miracle couple of plays that happened for them to score after that. So it was just, that was once in a lifetime you get to see.
It really was.
Wow.
Wild.
Let's circle back to the Titans here. And I heard an interesting discussion on the MMQB podcast, and Albert Breer has been, you know, he's a league reporter, but he is centric to New England. And they were talking about the unraveling of the Patriots. And something he said kind of resonated with me watching the Titans here. He said Bill Belichick has been able to have kind of this approach to build a roster. Well, if my roster is middle class with hardworking winners, and I have Tom Brady, I'll have a great team. And now he's got a working class middle tier roster without Tom Brady, and now he's been exposed. I thought about that a little bit with the Titans roster. I have a hard time sometimes when you get frustrated. Well, you know, they're close, but they didn't do well in the red zone, or they had a couple bad pass interferences. Some of it I look at and say, well, yeah, they can be better, and they can do better in these areas. But at the end of the day, they kind of have a middle class roster to a degree, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that, like, when you look at New England, just by the comparison that you know you're alluding to, don't you feel like through, you know, much of that time and run of success with whatever you thought about the roster, don't you feel like, especially, you know, and it wasn't always the same, but don't you feel like there, if it was like, all right, what's their identity on offense? Hey, what's their identity on defense? What are they, like, what does make them different than other teams? Like, I think there are times you can go, well, listen, they get to 3rd and 3 to 5, they're going to wear you out with, you know, Welker running option routes or Edelman. Or you get to the red zone or inside the 5-yard line, man, you got to defend their run game and quarterback sneak game, but they also have this 6'7" tight end that, you know, is basically catches everything around him. So, like, offensively, it was like you definitely had an identity to you. And then defensively, I think you could say the same thing. It was like, look, they don't do anything crazy in terms of coming after you, but they're really physical with your receivers, and they keep everything in front, and they really make you earn it in the red zone. Like, I think that you definitely have to have an identity and something that you hang your hat on that makes you the same as or better than other teams. And so I think for the Titans, don't you feel like some of this could have been like, well, the identity has been, you know, a defensive end playing tailback and being physical and, like, you know, doing some of those things. And, like, and I feel like through the first few games, I don't know that there's a real handle on the identity.
That's a great lead into my next question, because if we're watching Derrick Henry, we know, number one, he's got the utmost respect of the opponents, his teammates, mm-hmm. the organization, the coaches, flat out. He's still capable of leading them to a win, as we saw last week against Baltimore. But there seemed to be, if you look at sort of the back end of last year and so far this year, there's more games where he looks a little more human. And so I'm curious, as that happens, and maybe you don't have that identity where he's just lifting the team and he's the focal point of that. I made the reference yesterday. I saw it with UC Soros and Pecorine. Pecorine was the Predators version of Derrick Henry. Just, he's mm-hmm. got a statue. He's got a statue right now. That's all you need to know about Pecorine. But there came a time where UC Soros sort of grew into a point. Pecorine reached a level to his career where it was time to make the change. It was time to gradually have Soros become the man. I wonder with Tajay Spears how tempted they will get over the next few weeks to say, you know, Tajay Spears looks pretty good. This offense is desperate for explosiveness, guys who make people miss, guys who can get big chunk plays. I wonder what that dynamic is like. Because as you would know, Tim, it's not just you're making the decision. It's all the emotional parts that go into that in a locker room.
Well, and the element of, like, just because, like, there might be an emerging player that you feel like you need to get the ball more, it doesn't mean that, like, there's no value to the other player that still is a very good player, right? And so, like, you saw a little bit this weekend, we're like, both guys in the backfield, you know, even like, you know, Hayden Spears at one point, like in the backfield on a short yardage play. And like, I do think that, you know, you have to find ways where you get a little, you have some wrinkles that make sense. But to me, on the football perspective, this is the Dallas Cowboys. You know, Ezekiel Elliott, the last 2 years in Dallas, rushed for 22 touchdowns. Like, that's huge production. But there was never any question, I don't think, by anybody that was watching. It was like, golly, Tony Pollard needs to be on the field more. And, in fact, he maybe needs to be on the field more than the starter. And now, look, I don't think we've figured out if the Titans, if they have, you know, the Tony Pollard on their roster. But I think there are like there's definitely a point where like there's a suddenness that's different, that's a change up, that's an explosiveness.
Yeah, you watch plays and you're like, this guy's got something here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so I think with that, you at least have to explore it. And so I think the Titans are kind of in that spot right now.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Kind of along those same lines, what's the healthy balance between Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears? Because Tajay Spears is a heck of a player. And Tajay Spears has, you know, the quickness and he can get through those tight spaces. But Derrick Henry is still Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And in the two games the Titans have won this season, those are the only two games so far through 5 weeks that Derrick Henry has gotten the ball 20-plus times. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, I don't think it's a coincidence. And sometimes it happens where, you know, like driving my kids to school this morning and my son's like, man, Tony Pollard didn't get the ball at all this week. It's like, well, yeah, they got beat 42-20.
Right.
So, you know, there is an element of sometimes it's like, well, look, you'd love for Derrick Henry to have 25 carries every weekend and it's perfect and you're controlling the game and all of that stuff. And like sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. You know, another team makes a special teams play and you're down and the flow of the game changes or there's a turnover. And so I think that what makes it difficult, and I think this goes back to the identity question, like what is the balance? And what I would say is, unfortunately, I don't think you know going into every week. And I also think it's hard to be, you know, to be really good at both of the things. Like the hey, we're going to slow the game down, control the clock, you know, wear you down with our huge running back. Or, hey, you know what? We're trying to find areas to get our young, talented, elusive back the ball in space. And so with that, that's the plan. I think you've got to be able to make an adjustment week to week. And so, and that's why I use the Dallas example is I think there were ebbs and flows to that. And, you know, but what was consistent was still like, nope, this is our goal line back. Like, nope, this is our short yardage back. And I think coming to that balance is not easy, but I think you've seen it be done.
And maybe a little bit of growing pains when you start to carve out those roles. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, we got to get to the defense. I was so disappointed in the defense this past weekend, and it seems to be maybe public enemy number one around these parts is Christian Fulton. Because Christian Fulton, week after week, gets burned, gets called for very untimely DPIs, got called for two of them this past week, gave up a 3rd-and-16, gave up a 22-yard gain to the Indianapolis Colts on a DPI. At what point do you have to look at it and say, yeah, Christian Fulton might be one of our most talented corners, but he's hurting the team more than he's helping the team, and we just have to find an alternative. So we'll throw in one of the practice squad guys over our second round pick.
Yeah, I mean, look, you see it all the time when guys create penalties, right? I mean, there's been a big talk in Kansas City with their right tackle. You know, like, look, you make, you know, a bunch of penalties, you hurt your football team, right? Like, you're going to end up out of the lineup. I mean, I do think that it happens, and I think that, you know, sometimes for players, it's just, sometimes it's unfortunate with how things time up, but sometimes, you know, maybe isn't a great call or things of that nature. But sometimes it's like, look, yeah, you do. You need to take a step back and you need to clean things up. And, you know, as a coaching staff, you know, it's like, look, we're going to get back to fundamentals on the thing, especially with corners. Like, I feel like this happens a lot with corners where, you know, if a guy's struggling a little bit and people are throwing at him, you know, what happens is, moment of truth, balls come into the receiver. Even if they're in decent position, they panic. And by panicking, you know, they grab an arm or they get a fistful of jersey. And now all of a sudden, a play that was maybe going to be incomplete anyway because they were in a decent spot now becomes, you know, a pivotal play where they make a mistake and it hurts the football team. So, look, I think some of it depends on, in terms of making the move, where you feel like the other players are, where, you know, Christian Fulton is in terms of confidence and, you know, kind of headspace and all that stuff. But I don't think I would bet that some of these conversations are being had in the building currently.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, the 49ers, man, what a flex on Sunday night. I mean, they just annihilated the Cowboys, who I still think are really, really good. So that's pretty scary for the rest of the NFC. So how good is this 49ers team in your mind? Could they be the best team in football right now?
Yeah, I definitely think they could be the best team in football right now. They have an amazing defense. Their linebackers cover so much space. You know, they're great in the run game and the passing game. They've got amazing instincts, and so they just make so many plays. They can rush the passer. So that side of the ball is really, really good. And then, you know, their run game, like every Shanahan team, it seems, is really, really good. And they've got incredible receivers, a great tight end. And then look at Brock Purdy. And I think that it's strange because it's very clear. In some ways, stature-wise, he looks like a high school quarterback. And he doesn't have any, like, insane physical quality. But he is seeing things great, making amazing decisions. And so Philadelphia, to me, maybe is the better team in the NFC. But, I think they're right there with them, which is wild because, look, the Niners could very – I'll be surprised if they don't make the NFC championship game, which is incredible because their quarterback is making under $900,000 a year, which is – way less than many players make in single games.
That's crazy. And he's doing enough. Well, I wonder what will be the strategy for the 49ers with his next contract? Do they try to get him now where maybe they get him a little less expensive, or do they wait for them, like you said, to get to the championship game or get to a Super Bowl? Then all of a sudden his price tag is going to go way up.
Go way, way up. Yeah, my strategy anyway would be, because you got to think, you no fifth-year option, so this is year two. I would think that it would come soon where you extend him. And, look, I think a lot of that has to do with he's coming off an injury this year. Let's see how he responds and plays. Let's see how he plays for an entirety of a season. And so you can, you know, gather a little bit more information. You don't have to be in a total rush to do it, but if you truly believe that he is the guy, then I don't think there's any doubt that you want to race to doing the deal if you're the team, not to say to take advantage of the fact that he's the, you know, biggest bargain in all of sports, but kind of to prey on the idea that, he'll be, you know, far underpaid by comparison to his peers.
I mean, yeah, at this point, the way that the market is going, by Brock Purdy's next contract, quarterback's going to be making $100 million a year. It's crazy. It's crazy. Tim Hasselbeck, correct, ESPN NFL analyst, appreciate you as always for joining us. We'll chat next week.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Thanks, Tim. All right, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Willie touched on one thing with Tim that I want to get into coming up next. That happy medium between Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears. What works best for the Titans? What should the Titans' plan be moving forward with those two? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.